Hey, welcome to another edition of Tri Chatter. I'm so excited today because I've got a good friend of mine and outstanding race director, Jonathan Pauley.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Good to have you. So let me get a little bit of your history before we kind of jump into some of the races and stuff that you direct. Where'd you grow up and how'd you get started in triathlon?
Well, I actually grew up in West Virginia, and I was stationed in the Marine Corps out here in California at El Toro, and that was the last duty station that I had. And then that was in the mid-80s. Triathlon was just sort of becoming popular. And, you know, you can't really live in Southern California and not sort of catch a fitness bug. And so by the mid-80s, you know, I started to learn how to swim, and I was biking, and I was running a little bit. So I think in 1986, I did my first triathlon. I went on to become a private trainer and a coach. I coached a lot of running and triathletes. And then around early, I think it was maybe, what is this, 2011? About 2002, I went back and got my master's degree. I had my undergraduate degree in kinesiology. I went back and got my master's degree in sports and fitness management. And then shortly thereafter, started Renegade Racing and Make You Fit Productions, and started producing running and triathlon events.
So, do you remember the first triathlon you did?
Oh yeah, definitely. It was the Tri Events LA Tri Series, and back at the time, there wasn't a lot of choices for triathlons. So, I had been in a pool for some total of 3 weeks, of which the first day I could not swim from one end of the pool to the other. And I showed up to the LA Tri Series, and at that time they had a deep water start. So you had to swim out and start the swim from a sort of an imaginary start line in the middle of the lake. And I could barely tread water. I could barely swim.
Was this a wetsuit?
Oh, right, right before wetsuits.
Okay, all right.
So it's like mid-80s. Nobody was really swimming in wetsuits.
Right,
so
right.
You kind of all swam out there. You'd like treaded water and they went go. And everybody just sort of leaned forward. But, my kind of very fledgling swim skills, which you don't realize in a deep water start, is when a guy leans forward, his feet are about in your belly and your arms are about over his, you know, backside. And so everybody suddenly becomes, you know, arms and legs are bad in a normal start. Arms and legs are unbelievable in a deep water start.
Yeah.
So that was my first experience in triathlons, is a deep water start at Benelli Park.
Have they been doing that long?
Oh my gosh. I think that the Benelli is nearly 30 years now.
Is that right?
It's built as the world's, or not the world's, but the U.S.'s longest standing triathlon series.
Hmm. Yeah. I try to get out there and do one of their races every year. I just did it a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, we produce a couple of races out of Benelli, the Renegade Off-Road Tri and the Turkey Triathlon. So it's a really good venue for triathlons locally.
I didn't know that the Turkey Tri was out there. Is it on Thanksgiving Day?
Or? It's actually on the Sunday after Thanksgiving.
Okay.
So on Saturday we hold the San Dimas Turkey Trot, and then on Sunday we hold the Turkey Tri.
And what's the distances on that one?
The Turkey Tri is a half-mile swim, 14-mile bike ride, and a 4.5-mile run.
Oh.
It's a nice way to finish up your season. What we started was because there were so many Turkey Trots on Thanksgiving Day and Thanksgiving weekend, but there wasn't really a race for triathletes.
Yeah.
And it's really turned out to be a great race. So we cap it out at 1,000 people, and for the last couple of years, we've sold out.
Huh. Well, all right, maybe I need to put that one on my schedule. Usually by November, though, I'm pretty burned out.
You'd be surprised how many people race year-round these days. You know, when I first started triathlons, you know, it was a clear season. In fact, I don't think I even got on my bike from probably October until somewhere around March.
Yeah.
You know, with the first race of the year, I know I did Wildflower. I think I've done Wildflower like 9 times. But back in the early days of doing Wildflower in the late 80s, early 90s, you know, You could stay off your bike and, you know, until March, and you do a couple months worth of lead up. And now you have Oceanside and so many other races that start as early. We have a triathlon starts in February, the Race Home to Base Triathlon, which is a nice little reverse triathlon in Los Alamitos.
Yeah, yeah, that one I've never done either. That's at That's in a swimming pool, though.
Yeah, yeah. It's a reverse triathlon. Yeah. So it's a 3 mile run, a 12 mile bike ride, and a 200 meter pool swim. And we actually closed down the airfield at the Joint Forces Training Base. And you'll never have a flatter race in your whole life. Is that we do the run and the bike ride right on the airfield. So it's perfectly flat, and the swim is in a pool. So it's really a great race for people that don't have a lot of experience or just thinking about doing triathlons to get involved in. We actually have a training clinic up leading up to that event where we have as many as 100 people show up. Wow. For our training clinic. I think we have 4 training clinics prior to that. It's really a great race for just getting your feet into triathlons.
Yeah, I've never done one of those reverse triathlons. I remember, in fact, I had never swam after getting off the bike until I went to an Ironman training camp, and we rode our bikes to the pool, and oh my God, that is a totally different sensation, man. My legs were totally cramped up and everything. It's like, what's going on here? You know, yeah. I mean, it's not like we rode 50 miles either. I think we rode maybe 15 miles or something like that.
You really get a sense of how much you actually use your legs in swimming when you get into the pool when they're tired.
Like, yeah. That. Oh man, that was really something. So yeah, I'd like to do that. It's and you're right. The season keeps getting longer and longer. The thing about me, though, is I love to race. I mean, I would race every single weekend, whether it's a running race or a triathlon. I mean, I love to race. But, you know, the problem is that if you've got a goal, and this year I'm trying to qualify for Kona again, if you've got a goal, you know, you're racing, if it's not strategically placed, you know, kind of blows your whole training.
Right.
You know, it's guys like Bob Babbitt. You know, I don't think he trains at all, but he races every weekend.
Yeah. I think he does a little bit of closet training because, you know, he's definitely skinnier in the last couple of years than he has been in a few, you know, years before. But, Bob still does pretty good in his age group. But, you know, hey, there's something to be said for just getting out and racing every weekend. I know that I knew a guy once that ran a marathon a month for 24 straight months, and he almost did no training in between. You know, almost no training in between, but he progressively got better at his marathons because he was basically doing 26 miles, you know, once a month.
Yeah, unbelievable. Well, that's good. It's like whatever works for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the things that I wanted to talk about was and by the way, how do they find you? We'll announce this again later on, but what's the best way to find you? RenegadeRacing.com?
It's RenegadeRaceSeries.com. So, you know, that's always the best way. If you just Google Renegade Racing, we're probably like the top 8 or 10 listings. There is a Renegade Racing company that produces motorcycle parts. You know, every once in a while we get a call for that, but you know, by far and away, you know, it's the easiest way is just go to straight to our website, which is RenegadeRaceSeries.com.
Okay.
But if you Google Renegade Racing, you know, it's pretty easy to find us.
Okay. So how many events are you producing in a year?
Last year we produced about 30 events. I think this year we'll be closer to 35. Only about 6 of those are triathlons. The rest of them are... We do everything from mud runs to marathons, half marathons, 5Ks, 10Ks, adventure races. So we're pretty busy. We can produce as many. Just recently we produced 4 events in 13 days.
Wow.
Over the, you know, the holiday weekend, we have the 4th of July was just a few weeks ago. And so we had a 4th of July race. We had a race the weekend before. We had a Thursday evening summer trails run series that we did. And then we also, we do a lot of contract work, so we did all the transition area for the Carlsbad Triathlon. We didn't wholly produce it, but, you know, we were down there setting up fence and the transition areas and stuff like that, and helping out a lot of other race management companies and stuff. We do that in amongst the race, the 30 races that we produce.
Wow. I was at Carlsbad.
Were you?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was our bike rack and fence.
Yeah. I took second behind one of the guys I think we're going to be... talking with here again pretty soon, Steve Sponigal.
Yeah,
amazing guy. Kicked my butt. Good for him. But you know, one of my favorite triathlons that you produce is one that you came out with a couple of years ago, Magic Mountain Man. triathlon. What was the first year for that?
This will be our third year, so it's I think 2009 was our first year.
'09, yeah, and that's the year I did it. And before we got together, I went back and read my race report. I don't know if you saw my race report.
Yeah, a couple years ago, I think I read through it.
But that's a hard damn race, and it's changed, I guess, a little bit since the
yeah,
the
it's
first
even
time
got harder, believe it or not. If you could believe that the bike ride could get harder, it did get harder last year. We used to be, in the first year, we had a two transition area race with the race starting at Castaic Lake and then finishing in Santa Clarita. But last year, it made more sense for us to have the start and finish at Castaic Lake. But the only way to pick up the extra mileage that we used to get from going from Castaic down to Santa Clarita was to add an extra climb to the race. And so that extra climb added about 1,200 feet more climbing in the bike ride. So yeah, it's definitely, you know, we don't like to bill ourselves as the hardest triathlon because I don't know every other race that's out there, but I would have to say that, you know, the bike ride at least is one of the hardest bike rides that there is. Now the swim is great. It's in a lake. It's, you don't have to worry about any waves.
Oh, it's beautiful.
And the run now runs around the Castaic Lake. So you see water views during almost the entire run portion. So I think the run is, you know, it's reasonably flat. It has great views of the lake during the entire lake. But the bike ride's hard, that's for sure.
So what's the total elevation gain now, do you suppose?
It's about 7,700 feet in the half and about 3,200 feet in the Olympic distance.
Damn.
So, you know, I rode, I'm training for Ironman as well, Ironman Kentucky, and I rode on Sunday 68 miles and about 4,700 feet of climbing. And I was just kind of thinking to myself, you know, I rode further, but did only about two thirds of the amount of the climbing that we'd have in the race. I certainly didn't get off and run 13. So, you know, the bike ride's hard, but, you know, it's very doable, and it's, I think that, you know, to me, anything that's worthwhile should be hard. You know, when you come across the finish line at Magic Mountain, man, you know you accomplished something. You know, if it's possible that there's been a dumbing down of races over the last few years to create a more accepting atmosphere, I think that's sort of happened. And to have one good, really hard local race, I think it's just positive for the sport, is that, you know, that doesn't diminish anybody's accomplishments from doing any other race. But I say, you know, you finish Magic Mountain, man, you know, you've really done something, because that the bike ride's no joke.
It was a tough ride. You know, I'm trying to think here if I even have that in here. It was like 6,000.
Yeah,
about 6,000 feet.
The year that you did it was about 6,300 feet of climbing.
Yeah, and just looking back on my stats here, you know, my cadence and so on. And I've never been a real strong cyclist, but I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed it. The venue was great. You know, that particular race, you know, a lot of times it's hard for me to catch a good draft on the swim, but man, I caught a great draft on that, you know, rounding that first buoy. I got on the heels of this guy. It must have been 250 pounds, but man, could he swim! And I got on his heels, and I drafted him almost all the way to the end. You know.
Well, you know what makes our race kind of unique, in Southern California as well, is that we're the only half Ironman that actually has a mass start swim. So even though we're a USA Triathlon race, we submit and have gotten a waiver to be a mass start swim. And I think that's really, you know, for people that are training for Ironman, you know, look, you get to Ironman, you got 1,500 people, you know, or plus jumping in the water at one time. That can be a relatively intimidating experience if you don't have any experience of that at all. And then you have to get that experience in an Ironman. So what we're doing is we're actually producing a good quality, hard half Ironman, but giving you that mass start swim experience in probably less than 1,500 people. You know, we're in that 500-600 range.
Yeah. No, it's a great race. I'd recommend it to anybody. And like I say, I'm not a strong cyclist, but I had a blast out there, you know. And I remember I kept seeing this guy who's now a mutual friend of ours, Gary Clendenin. Mm-hmm. I kept seeing him out on the course, and I passed him on the run. It must have been maybe mile three or something like that. And I'd seen him on the swim and the bike and everything, and he had his compression socks on, so he was covering up his age on his calf. And that's why I think that's half the reason why people wear compression socks when they're doing triathlons, because people don't know what their age is. So I pulled up next to him and said, what age are you, dude? At that time, I think he said he was 58 or mm-hmm. something like that. And I said, oh, okay, that's good. So you're not in my age group. So I ran past him and ended up going to, it's probably about mile 12 or something like that. And he ended up passing me. And then another guy passed me who was in his same age group. I just let him go because, you know, they're not in my age group. If you want to beat me, that's fine. I ended up winning that race, you know. And even with a terrible bike split, I won.
Well, you know, terrible bike split is a relative term there. You know, it's not really much to compare to until you come back and race again.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it was a tough day. So what are you doing these days? I know that you're trying to race more, and you and I are both doing Ironman Louisville. That's one of the reasons why I wanted to talk with you to find out what you're doing.
We're continuing to work really hard to produce races. We have a whole series of triathlon training clinics at the local sports chalets. I think we have 10 of those coming up. This coming Saturday on the 23rd is the first pre-ride for the Magic Mountain Man, where we have three pre-rides. People can actually get out and we do a guided ride, a supported ride, where they can get the water and food and stuff out on the course, and we can watch for the pick them up on the sag, so they actually get a chance to get out and see that bike ride. And then personally, I'm trying to get as much training in as possible to prepare for Ironman Louisville. We actually had the Magic Mountain Man's on the same weekend as Kona, so you know, I by default won't be racing Kona anytime soon. But you know, I've done Kona a couple times, and it's not a huge goal for me to go back to do the race again. This will be my 13th Ironman overall. I've raced all over the world, and so this actually, besides Hawaii, it's my first domestic Ironman I've done. I've raced in Australia, Brazil, France, Japan. I've done Switzerland and Germany, so I've really been lucky to race and around the world and travel around the world doing triathlons. So I think that just trying to get a little bit more fit to myself and get myself in shape to race a little bit more this fall would all be good. But owning a business, as you know, can become all encompassing. So between keeping Renegade Racing going and the number of events and continuing to grow that and get my own training in, then that's about all the time I have available.
Yeah, I mean, we're normally doing long bikes and rides on Saturday, Sunday, but most of your weekends are
full of races.
Yeah, yeah.
So or training rides even this weekend.
Yeah, yeah. Wow.
And I'm going to get up tomorrow and try to do my 80-mile ride.
Tomorrow's your 80-mile ride. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I've got to switch my schedule up a little bit, too. I'm going to be doing mine on Friday. Yeah. So what do you, we're both doing Ironman Louisville, mm-hmm. and this will be my first time doing that one. Your first time as well.
Yeah, first time doing Ironman Louisville. So I was fortunate enough, in mid-June, I happened to be passing through on a road trip and took my bike with me, passed through Louisville, and I got to actually hop onto the bike course and ride the bike course.
Oh.
So I got a little firsthand knowledge of what the actual road looks like. So I'm pretty excited about that. You know, there's no huge climbs, which is good for me. I'm a kind of heavier size triathlete, so it's not necessarily flat and fast, but rollers that you can sort of power across are always good for me.
Yeah, I'm hoping to ride the course when we get there, so I can get some kind of, or drive the course.
There you go.
I'm not going to ride it. Yeah, that would be crazy. So what kind of training are you doing then? I mean, how many workouts a week? What kind of mileage? What's your plan now?
Well, okay, you know, I did my first Ironman in 1991, and so I've got quite a bit of Ironman experience, you know, coming up on 20 years. In the early days, I used to, I'd train for 11 straight months for an Ironman, and I would do really, really well at it. But, you know, as you start getting a little bit older and your goals change a little bit, and if Kona's not my goal, and, you know, each year I kind of like tend to train a little bit less. My last race that I did was Ironman Japan. I trained for 30 days, tapered for 2 weeks, and went and did the race.
Nice.
So,
and were you happy with your time?
I was completely thrilled with my time.
There you go. Everybody's doing it wrong, man.
My undergraduate degree is in kinesiology and physical education. I was a coach for 20 years, so I know a lot about how to train, but... I don't always think that the amount of training that a lot of the books recommend is absolutely necessary, especially if you're going to participate. If you're going to race, a very complicated, very high-tech training approach is more than warranted. But if you're going to go from point A to point B and smile and wave and kiss babies along the way, then I have a much more relaxed training program than probably what you have. There's been weeks, last week I went 5 straight days without training at all.
Sound good this time of year?
I get what I can get in when I can get it in. And, you know, I have a sort of a general theme in my head. But if, you know, I get to work and I have to work late or something comes up that I can't do training, I just skip on to the next day and, you know, try to get in what I get in. So, you know, I would say that, I've got maybe 3 or 4 60-mile rides in at this point, with the race being maybe about 6 weeks away. You know, I haven't ridden over 70 miles yet, and I haven't ran over 12 miles yet. So I think that over the next 4 weeks, my biking, if everything goes well and I can squeeze it in, I'll get an 80, I'll get a 90, I'll get 100, I'll maybe get 105. Those will be my next 4 big rides, and my run... I ran 12 yesterday. You know, at some point I'll get a 14, I'll get a 16, I'll get a 18 or 19, and then I might get one chance to go over 20, but it won't be really more than 21. But whether I get, how much I get in between those actual workouts, I don't know, you know. Probably not enough miles to support it, but also I'm not breaking down because I'm over training.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, that's a key, especially when you get to be our age, you know.
I'll go out and have a good time with a race. I really have no expectations on what my time is. As long as I come in before the cutoff, I think my fastest Ironman is like 10:20, and I think my slowest Ironman is around 14.5.
Where'd you do 10:20? That's amazing.
Australia.
Yeah. And what year was that?
I think it was 2001.
Wow.
It was in that neighborhood in 2001. I was, you know, I was pretty fit. I was actually the same year I did Kona, and I was feeling pretty good.
So is that where you qualified for Kona?
Yeah, I actually got both my Kona spots through the Challenge Athletes Foundation.
Oh, okay.
So I've been a big supporter and fundraiser for the Challenge Athletes Foundation for probably 10 or 12 years now. And the San Diego Triathlon Challenge, which I participated in for about 6 years. During that 6 years, I raised about $175,000 for the organization.
Oh, nice.
And was either the top or the second or third highest fundraiser nearly every year that I participated. So they, you know, they give away a Kona spot for the top 2 fundraisers, and I picked up 2 spots twice. You know, a spot, you know, 1 year, and then a couple years later, I picked up another spot. So both the times that I competed in Kona, I did it through the Challenge Athletes Foundation.
Oh, wow, that's
and,
great!
And what's interesting about that is now that we've come full circle is that I'm actually the race director for the San Diego Triathlon Challenge, and so I manage that event.
Oh. So can you give yourself a Kona slot?
I can't give myself a Kona slot. But again, I don't have any interest in going back to Kona.
You don't even care. For those of us that, you know, I mean, that's our holy grail. It's like, how can you not, you know? And actually, I'm a coach myself, yeah. But I believe in coaching so much that I've got to coach myself,
right.
You know? So He actually qualified for Kona at, St. Croix.
Yep.
And one of the few remaining 70.3s that you can qualify for Kona at. And he won his age group and just passed on it. It's like, you're kidding me. You won your age group. You qualify for Kona, you're not going to do it? And it's, okay. I've been there. I've done it.
So. Yeah. It is the holy grail. And have you done Kona before?
I did it last year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's you know, Kona's Kona. You know, it's a great race and it's amazing. But, you know, there's so many other more interesting races that I'd like to do in my life than Kona. And now that I've done Kona twice, you know, definitely I want to go and do some other races. Oh my gosh, I mean, I raced in Japan and it was, you know, it's such a, like, almost alien environment. It was crazy. It was just like an amazing experience. You know, I've raced at Ironman Nice, which just has just epic climbs and just like the Tour de France in it. And the run runs along, the Nice beach, and you know it's just an amazing experience to travel around the world and do some of these other races that, that holds a lot more interest for me than maybe getting back to Kona. You know, 10 or 15 years, who knows? You know, maybe World Triathlon Corporations will have come in, swept in and bought Magic Mountain Man, and I'll have the weekend open and free time to do it.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, it's. I'd love to do some of those overseas races. I haven't done even Canada yet. You know, that's on my list. But
yeah. I did Canada three times, and you know, some of the people who are listening to this might be, you know, surprised to find out that you know in the early '90s, you could sign up for Canada like in March or April of the year of the race. Now, if you don't fly up there and sign up on the day after the race, it's practically impossible to get into the event. But you know, there was a time, a long time ago, it also used to have like 140 Ironman spots.
Mm, that's right.
And, it was, you know, if you wanted to go to Ironman, you know, that was really the spot to go to because it just had so many spots.
Yeah, not anymore. I don't know what they've got now. 65, I think, seems to be the norm for a typical. Although I think Germany's got 100 or something like that, but all the rest of them have got 65 or so. But that's got a lot of interest for me to travel around the world and do that. I've got one of my friends from the Orange County Triathlon Club, John Steed. His goal was to try to hit every Ironman throughout the world, and of course they keep adding races.
So it was just when you get close to the goal, then they add another one.
Yeah, so. I don't know. I think he's been stalled the last couple of years, but I don't know, even know how many he's done. But it's got to be 20 or so that he's done.
In the continental United States, there really didn't used to be very many Ironman races. We had California for a short time out here, and then you had New York at Lake Placid, and then that was really it for the continental United States. But you know, I couldn't even count how many. I mean, they have Wisconsin and Kentucky and St. George, and you know, they've got them, you know, all over the place now. It seems like there's, if you want to do a domestic Ironman, there's plenty of opportunity to do it.
Yeah, and even more with the 70.3s too.
Yeah, little tons.
Yeah, so give us some of your insight. What tips can you give to people that might be listening in terms of training and racing fast?
Well, you know, I think that you know, certainly you have to do the physical training to participate in a race, and I think that really taking a look at the size of the event that you're doing and the realistic amount of training that you'll need to do the event. You know, I teach a little class called Introduction to Triathlon, and I tell people they need to open up their schedule and write all their work schedule in there. They need to write all their personal time in there. Then they need to put downtime into their schedule, and then some fudge time, and then whatever's left is your training time.
Yeah.
And depending on what's left is what the race that you can sort of pick. You know, if you don't have much time left in there, then you need to pick a sprint or an Olympic. If you feel that you have a little bit of flexibility, you don't have a lot of family obligations or kids and soccer and that kind of stuff, then you half Ironman. If the kids are out of, you know, you don't have any kids, you're not married, or the kids are already gone, then, you know, you can start looking at Ironman racing because you just don't have as much time to train if you have lots of other obligations besides work. And then, you know, once you kind of have your realistic amount of training that you can do, is then, you know, developing a, you know, sort of structured approach to your training. You know, that's not really true for, you know, for me, you know, because I just talked about that I don't necessarily follow this method. But again, remember my degrees in kinesiology and physical education. I've done tons of triathlons. So it brings me back to my next point, which is I think that the hardest part about doing any triathlon or any distance, but especially true for Ironman, is that the mental aspect is almost far outweighs the physical aspect of doing racing. It's so much easier to get yourself tripped up mentally in during the training or at the race than it is to for your body to actually break down. And I'll say that Ironman training is way harder. I remember the first Ironman I did Ironman Canada, and I crossed the finish line and I was expecting this big emotional experience that I've sort of seen on TV, and I was like, oh my gosh, you know,
it's going to be
such an accomplishment. And I remember running across the finish line for the first time and going, holy cow, the training was so much harder than the race. it was just months and months and months of like keeping your head in the game.
Yeah.
And then at the race itself, it's like, you know, obviously you have to do the physical training, but once you get to the race is that, you know, you have to keep your head sort of wrapped around the idea of what you're going to do all day long. It's like, okay, I'm going to get up early. I'm not going to be grumpy about it. I'm going to get to the race, and if there's traffic, I'm not going to be grumpy about it. I'm not going to let these little things knock me off my game. I'm going to get into the swim, and oh my gosh, it's cold or there's seaweed, but I'm not going to get grumpy about it. Because all these like little things that can just eat into your psyche until you're, you know, out onto the run and you go, I just don't feel like doing this anymore. I didn't get the sleep I wanted to do. I didn't eat the things I wanted to eat this morning. It was traffic getting in here. I had a crappy swim. My legs don't feel good. You know, all these like little things, you know, is keeping your psychological edge through the entire race itself is as important, if not more important, than the physical training that you did to get there or the physical exertion that you're doing at the event.
Yeah.
Is just really trying to keep a positive spin on every single thing that happens during the day. It's like, oh, there's traffic. Ah, I get more time to sit down. You know, it's, oh, there's seaweed. Ooh, look, is there a fish there? You know, just, oh, the water's cold. Wow, I guess it won't get hot today, you know? So just really making it a fun and positive experience, because that fun and positive experience will translate into the physical that you're doing. And your body will just have better rhythms going through the race when you're happy about being there than it is when you're, you know, so psyched out about, am I going to finish? Am I going to get the time I want? You know, when you toe up the line, you're going to get whatever you get. You know, hopefully it's a great day, but sometimes it's not. And, you know, you got to be able to handle those situations just as well as you handle the days that you just smoke the course.
Yeah, what? That's a very good point. I don't think we spend enough time talking about the mental part of the game, but I can tell you that I did St. George, you know, a little while ago, and the main reason why I did it is because I had a bunch of buddies that I trained with and such, and they were all doing it. And it's like, yeah, okay, it's not my kind of course. It's you know, it's very hilly bike course, and sometimes it gets really windy. So I was never that into the race anyway. I didn't think I had a reasonable chance to qualify for Kona there. And then I was doing 70.3 in Hawaii a couple of weeks after that. So I never really got into that race, you know. And the water was cold, like you said. The swim was at, I think, 3,000 feet of altitude. And I got out and I started to swim and I started to hyperventilate. And it's like, I'm not having any fun. And the whole day, you know, it's like I got out on the bike and it's like, oh man, this is, you know, I just wasn't having a great day. I just, it was not going to be my day. So I kind of went through the motions on that one, just realizing that, you know, it wasn't going to be my race. But I could have, it's not like it was a big disaster or anything. Right. I ended up stopping after one loop on the run course, but that was by design because it's like, okay, I'm not in contention to qualify here, so I'll hang it up and save my energy for Hona, which was a couple of weeks later. But really the attitude for that race should have been, this is just going to be a great training day, mm-hmm. you know, and that's how I should have couched it and should have just kept, you know, my focus on that and like, wow, you know, what a great opportunity. It's so beautiful here. And, you know, that's really how I should have
positioned it. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, look, I mean, you know, it's a very professional attitude to, you know, to you know, to be able to step back and say, look, you know, if my real goal is to be, to qualify for Hawaii and I'm going to race again in 2 weeks, you know, and I'm not going to do it here, you know, save the legs. It's perfect. But I mean, it's, you know, I think that a lot of participants in these races, they have a specific goal, what they want. I mean, whether it's a qualifying time for Hawaii or whether it's a personal goal that they're trying to hit, and when that goal doesn't happen, it's very mentally hard to continue on at any kind of pace or any kind of like enjoyment. And I got to. You know, a reasonable story to say is that Ironman Canada, the second year that I did it, I ended up dropping out of the race. It's the only Ironman out of all the Ironmans I've done that I ever dropped out of the race. And I got about 9 miles into the run, and I wasn't going to, this is my second Ironman, and I wasn't going to break the time that I had in my first Ironman.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't wrap my head around it mentally that I had put all this time and all this effort and all this training into it. I'd crushed the swim. I'd done like 56 minutes on the swim. I'd done a 5:10 bike ride.
Wow.
And I got out onto the run, and I was just not running what I thought I was going to run, which was be somewhere around a 3.5 hour run. I wasn't running slow. I just wasn't running 3.5 hours.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't wrap my head around it, and I quit.
Yeah.
And it's one of the things I totally regret that I didn't continue on. But it kind of goes all back to the psychology of it. Is like, you know, what could I have done, you know, to do better? Well, I could have just had a good time. Once I got to that point, I could have said, oh, you know what? I'm still fit. I'm still having a good time. Let me just go ahead and finish the race.
Yeah.
I still would have had a great Ironman time, probably still under 11 hours.
Yeah. It's in... You know, I don't know what to, you know, I don't know if there's some sort of mental exercise you can do, but...
Well, I think during your training is like, you know, if you're training yourself physically during your training, you have to train yourself mentally as well. So is really practicing having a good attitude, you know, while you're out there doing your bike and your run. I mean, it's pretty hard to like, you know, giggle and smile and laugh, you know, when you're doing your swim workouts. But hey, even during your swim workouts, if you're doing ocean swims, you know, take a second to, you know, look at the fish, to look around, you know, to, you know, lift your head up and go, gosh, this is just amazing. I'm so happy to be out here in the middle of the ocean and swimming. And that mental attitude that you have during your training and the positive experience that you're having will relate to a more positive experience during the race. And so when you get to the dark miles, you know, where the miles are, where the all those like little demons come up and start, you know, talking in your ears and telling you to quit and stop, is that you actually have trained yourself mentally to be able to feel better about, you know, where you're at and what you're doing, so that you don't hear the little demons. You know, I call in Ironman, I call the dark miles between miles 15 during the run and 22. At you know, you've done the whole swim, you've done the whole bike ride. And you've run 15 miles, and at 15 miles, I mean, you've been out there for, you know, 9, 10, 11, possibly 12 hours.
Right.
Nobody would fault you. If you went home and told your friends and family that you stopped after 15 miles of running, you know, they would all still, you know, slap you in the back and say, great effort, you know, it was amazing. I couldn't do that. Right. You know, it was great. Nobody would, like, fault you for, like, you know, stopping at mile 15. And you got 11 more miles to run, you know, and then the demons start to come in, and they're like, well, you know, think about all the things I could get done if I didn't have to bike every weekend and I didn't have to run so long, and how much better would I feel, and what could I sell my bike for? And, you know, gosh, you know, the, you know, I took this, you know, I spent all this money on this trip and all I'm doing is a triathlon. You know, I could go to France for this, or, you know, right. All these demons start to tell you to right. stop and quit triathlons. What are you doing? But by the time you get to mile 22, you know, you go, it's four more miles. Yeah. You know, the light starts to shine again, you know, and the closer you get to the finish line, the brighter the light gets, and the, you know, you're getting closer to town, there's more people out there clapping, and you start feeling good about yourself, and you find yourself in the last mile almost, you know, laughing and jogging, and you're running into the transition area and feeling good about the whole race, and the dark miles are almost left you.
Yeah.
That's you know, saying that you didn't actually listen to the demons that were talking to you during the mile 15 to 22. So I think that, you know, really spending a lot of time out in your training, you know, doing the physical work, but thinking about it all the time that you're out there is like, how good a time am I having, and how can I translate this positive experience to actual race day? And it'll end up being a more, it'll be a better performance and a more positive experience when you actually get to the race.
Yeah, yeah, I totally agree with that. Okay, but now having said that, Louisville at the end of August is probably not going to be, you know, 75 degrees and, you know, 20% humidity. So what are you going to do, or maybe what should you do to prepare for the heat and humidity that we're probably going to have?
Well, look, here in Southern California, for us, you know, it's, we're not immune to heat here. So, you know, I train in the middle of the day. I tend to sleep until I wake up, just generally speaking, on my long training days. I get up, I have a cup of coffee, I kind of meander around the house, and I get out a lot of times at 9 or 10 o'clock. So I train during the heat of the day so that I can, your body will adapt to whatever environment I put it into. We don't have humidity here, there's nothing you can do. But I can train during the heat of the day, so that my body continually adapts to what it feels like. You know, if I got up at 5:30 in the morning and biked from 5:30 until 10 so that I missed the heat, then my body's not physiologically going to adapt to the heat of the day.
Right.
I sweat. I mean, I sweat bucket loads. So, you know, having a lot of water on my skin is not necessarily anything that's really new to me. So by training in the heat of the day, you know, drinking copious amounts of water, you know, that's, you know, as best as I can train for the heat and humidity here in Southern California. I think that, you know, there's been a couple of rides I've already had where my heart rate was, I mean, if I hit a bump in the road, it went to 180, you know, but, you know, I put myself into that environment time and time and time again, where, you know, I'm asking my body to perform in these kind of conditions. Not only am I going to feel what it feels like to race and train in that kind of conditions, but, you know, my body will physiologically adapt to that. You know, I take Endurolites by Heed, and, you know, I drink, you know, a lot of water, and really work on my nutrition so that, you know, I'm also, you know, when it's really hot like that, you're sweating so much, is that digestion becomes a real issue.
Yeah.
So you really work on what foods can you eat and what foods, you know, can't you eat during the race, so that, you know, by training the heat of the day, what foods that you need to actually eat. You know, I think that a lot of people, you know, miss that. They want to train really super early because the traffic's light and they don't think about the conditions that they're going to be in. You know, Ironman Kentucky is not exactly flat. It's not exactly hilly, but it's not exactly flat. You know, so I'm riding 4,000 feet of climbing during my ride, so
right.
that I get used to that regular undulations. You know, it's not just going to be get on my bike, get it out of my tuck and go. And it's also not going to be epic climbs. So I don't put epic climbs into my ride, but I do put a lot of rollies.
So what about nutrition? What do you do? What do you take on the bike? What do you take on the run, or what's your plan?
Look, you know, I'm a little old school on some of these things, and a lot of it's experience as well as knowledge. Is that, you know, I use I use blocks, I use gels, I buy Gatorade because it's handy. You know, I use a lot of Gatorade, but I use Heat as well.
Mm-hmm.
I might start off with Heat and switch to Gatorade when I stop at the grocery store to get more fluid. But I also do like quirky things like peanut butter filled pretzels. hey, peanut butter filled pretzels are awesome. They got protein because your body needs protein. You do 12 hours of exercise. You got no mechanism in your body to store protein. So as the day goes on, you need to make enzymes. You need to make hormones. You need to do a lot of different metabolic functions. If you're not actively taking in protein during a long endurance activity, then you have to rob your muscle tissue to actually create these hormones and proteins to do these metabolic activities. So to have something that's got a little bit of protein in it, it's got some in the pretzel outer covering, it's got some carbohydrates, and it's got salt.
Salt, yeah.
It's, you know, it's to got me, everything it's, you need. And it's portable. I mean, it's like the ultimate portable food. But I've done like peanut butter and jelly sandwiches.
Yeah.
You know, there's one of my Ironman lore stories where I ate pizza. I've actually eaten pizza twice during Ironman. I did an Ironman Canada 1 year, and I did an Ironman Hawaii 1 year. I'm going up Pay and Save Hill in Ironman Hawaii. There's somebody standing on the side of the road, and they were eating pizza. And they're like, yeah, cheering, cheering, cheering. And I was like, hey, pizza. They're like, yeah, pizza. I bet you wish you had some. I said, I'd love some. And they go, you want a piece? I go, absolutely. So I'm walking up Pay and Save Hill in the middle of Ironman Hawaii eating pizza. You know, but I've got an iron stomach, you know, but hey, pizza, you know, it's got a little bit of protein, it's got some cheese in it, so it's got a little bit of fat, it's going to slow my digestion down, it's got tomato sauce and carbohydrates,
yeah.
It's got everything I need. I don't necessarily recommend it for everybody, but, you know, I have eaten pizza in the middle of an Ironman twice.
Yeah, that's a riot. Yeah, well, that's, I have a hard time digesting or keeping anything solid down, so I'm strictly fluids on the bike and the run.
Hard to get a lot enough calories in that way.
It is hard. I'm able to mix I use Infinite, and I'm able to mix 900 calories per bottle, and I'll have two bottles on the bike, so it gives me 1,800 there, and then I'll take it with me on the run, and that'll be another 1,200, so.
And you drink a lot of water with that to help digest
chase,
it?
Yeah, chase the water.
Yeah, because a carbohydrate metabolism can only happen in the presence of water. So you have to bind a water molecule to carbohydrates to actually, you know, bring it in. So, you know, I think that a lot of people that that do highly concentrated calories, they don't really understand the volume of water that they need to actually consume with that to be able to metabolize. And so what will happen is that they'll get an incredible amount of gastric bloating.
Yeah.
Because the carbohydrates can't, you know, they can't be absorbed because there's so much, they're not absorbing it with the water because the person's not taking enough water.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I always chase it with water.
Yeah. You're drinking small amounts and then chasing it with a lot of water.
Yeah.
To me, I get hungry. You know, my stomach, you know, if I try to do a whole Ironman and never have any solid food, you know, I get hungry. You know, I gotta have something in my belly. You know, I'm just like, hey. You know, give me like a banana, give me an orange, give me, you know, any kind of solid food. You know, I've eaten, you know, I used to like make for my training rides, and we'd take them to races where it was possible to take them to, but I would make brownies with that were made with coffee. So instead of using water or milk, sometimes we'd use actual like espresso kind of coffee as the fluid into it.
Yeah.
So we'd make a chocolate brownie, but it'd like be full of all this caffeine. You know, so, you know, you get the carbohydrates and you get like the energy boost from the caffeine. You know, obviously you drink a lot of water, but I mean, that's not easy for everybody to digest, but man, that's a powerhouse in a bar.
Yeah, man, you ought to package that.
Yeah, those are great.
Renegade bars. Love it.
Yeah. So I've eaten a lot of weird things during the race, but I think for most people, what's most important is that they try a wide variety of products. Any of the nutritional products, you can call or email Hammer, Gatorade, any of them, and ask for samples. They'll send you samples. They're happy to send you samples. Mm. You know, they give away samples by the thousands. So any product, you don't have to buy a whole tub of anything. Just call and ask for a sample. Use it two or three times during your training and see if it's something that you can actually improve your performance, that you have a good gastric emptying and good absorption on the product. And then don't stray away from, you know, common foods, because, you know, if you're racing in an area in the United States where you can get peanut butter and bread and, you know, peanut butter filled pretzels and those kinds of things, I think that it's important that you don't tie yourself down to such structured nutrition that you give yourself no leeway. What will happen is that for some reason you'll go to a race, your nutrition gets lost in your luggage or lost in the mail and doesn't show up, and people completely panic because they don't have the exact nutrition that they've been training with because they had such a narrow window of what that they were narrow item list that they could actually train and race with. Yeah. But they can't go to Vons or Albertsons and, you know, pick up some stuff that right. they can get by with on the race. And then, you know, the common foods that you'll find out there that the race themselves were giving away, you know, can you eat oranges? Can you eat bananas? Can you eat like oatmeal cookies? You know, I can do it all, you know, but you know, not everybody can, but you know, if you practice with that stuff while you're out training, you know, then you've got another ready food supply that you're likely to see out on the race course.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a great piece of advice. Cause actually, one of my pals that does quite a few Ironmans, had his Infinite or Heat or whatever it was in the refrigerator, left, went to the race. Oh no, I don't have my, you know, my stuff. That's what I train with. That's what I do. And it's like, you know, you're talking about the mental game. It was like,
all of a sudden he's like off his game and he's got, yeah. he's like, oh, how am I going to get my calories? What am I going to do?
Yeah.
Eat whatever they got on the course. You
and
know?
And he did, and he was fine.
Yeah.
But yeah, for that reason, I train with Gatorade, but I also train with Infinite. So I can go either way if I need to.
I was just so hungry. I can't even imagine.
Well, I think we'll leave it there. This has been great. I appreciate you coming in and doing our little podcast here. Tell us again how they can reach you.
Again, it's they can go for any of our races. You can go to RenegadeRaceSeries.com. And for Magic Mountain Man in particular, we have its own domain, which is MagicMountainMan.com. That's for LA's only half Ironman distance race. And we also have an Olympic there. And you know, it's, you know, easy to Google us at Renegade Racing. It will definitely pop up if you get the website. Any of our ads, we have the QR code in now. So if you happen to see one of our ads in the magazine, you only need to use your smartphone to scan it, and it'll take you right to our website.
Cool. So what's the date this year of Magic Mountain Man?
Magic Mountain Man Triathlon is on October 9th. And Turkey Tri will be on November 27th.
Well, if I don't qualify for Kona, which I hope I do.
Yes.
Maybe I'll come out and do your race again.
Right. Great. Well, good luck.
Thanks. Well, you can always find us at triathica.com or triathicaacademy.com. Or you can email me directly at ron@triathica.com. So great being with you all of you again, and we'll talk again soon. See ya.